Tara Hurst, welcome to Payable.
Thanks, Bill. I'm excited to have this conversation with you.
Tara Hurst is director of the Oregon Health Justice Recovery Alliance. Tara has been the director of Renew Oregon. She worked with the Measure 11 campaign that fought for Measure 110 in Oregon. In the excitement of the November 3rd election, it didn't make national headlines, but Measure 110 did something enormously important that no state had ever attempted. What happened? Oregon voters, nearly 60% of them, decriminalized the possession of small amounts of not just marijuana, but also what are known as the hard drugs. And Measure 110 also provided funds for increased drug treatment. Tara was hired on to lead the Oregon Health Justice Recovery Alliance. It's a 65-member coalition. It's working to ensure that Oregon's new law is implemented fully and without delay, and centers on the needs of communities most harmed by the war on drugs, Black, Latinx, Native and tribal communities. James Baldwin and Martin Luther King Jr. warned about the drug wars, how it would be used to control Black communities. So first, Tara Hurst, I read some on your personal history. How did it inform your work on dealing with drug addiction and drug use? And tell us the goals of Measure 110.
I'm a person in long-term recovery, and what that means is that I have been alcohol and drug-free for 24 years now. And so coming into this work is not just meaningful and exciting for the state of Oregon, as you said. Got recognition around the world. It has the opportunity to be such a transformative policy in communities, but it's also really personal to me. I struggled with addiction and with depression, and I really didn't think that I could live without using alcohol and drugs. And now I'm in a space where I'm able to give back to the community that was so fundamental in me being alive today and me being able to have the life that I have. So it's a complete honor to be able to lead this work in Oregon. Just from a personal standpoint, I think that the more that we can start talking about our stories and shedding light on who struggles with drug addiction, everybody knows somebody in their community or their family, if it's not themselves. It's really critical that we reduce the stigma and the harmful language around substance use. The Measure 110 is a really incredible piece of legislation and is now law in Oregon. It became enacted on December 3rd. And what it does is, as you said, it decriminalizes personal possession of small amounts of drugs. And what that does for folks is it really helps reduce the barriers that so many people face when they are charged with these low-level offenses. It may not be a lot of time, but what it does is it gives you a record, and it's harder to access employment and housing, and exacerbates kind of the trauma that you're already in when you're in an active addiction. What this does, instead of going to jail, it is a warm handoff to peer mentors who will be on a phone line to ensure that you are given opportunities to receive services that can help you stay safe and ultimately, hopefully, get you on a path to thrive. And that can be anything from intensive outpatient services, safe housing, because a lot of times it's really about making sure that you can get out of the situation you're in. It's talking to peers. You know, one of the things that helped me and has helped so many folks is really talking to people who understand what you've been through and what kind of the depth of an addiction can take you to, and somebody who has been able to stop using drugs and alcohol or who has been able to create a life for themselves, having those conversations and being able to start working through whatever it is that you need to get through some of the trauma that you've experienced. It's also about making sure that we're helping folks who, what they call harm reductions. Too many people are being admitted to the hospital because of infections from dirty needles. We've had an increase in overdose deaths in Oregon from April and May this year. It was 70% more overdose deaths. And you know, these are statistics that, you know, for me personally, I've had friends die of overdoses, and these aren't just statistics that go out on an organizational or a government website. These are people's family members. They're their loved ones. And we have to do everything we possibly can to help people stay safe. And so what I think is transformational about this is not only that we're able to help alleviate the barrier of jail or a record, but also it's the next step of ensuring that we're funding a system of care, which in Oregon is embarrassingly and heartbreakingly low. So in Oregon, we're fourth in the nation for addiction rates, and we are at the bottom 48, 49, or 50, depending on who you ask, in access to services. We have more folks addicted and less opportunities to get them to where they need to be than any other state in the country. This is why we're seeing such dismal rates in overdoses and addiction. So I'm really excited because access to treatment for me is what worked, and it's why I'm able to have the life that I have today and the idea that I can work and help, you know, really make sure that others will have that when they are ready and when they need it, and that in the meantime, we can offer a whole variety of services and make sure that we're expanding services to those communities that are most harmed, as you talked about, from the war on drugs. And we know that those communities, not only were they most harmed, they also have the least access to care. So again, the worst of both situations, and it's time that Oregon makes up for that and really invests the majority of funds in those communities to make sure that we have culturally specific care ready and available when people need it.
Every measure one can would reduce mass incarceration. That's, of course, not the sole reason for mass incarceration. There are many reasons, but finding a few grains of something gives the police a chance to both threaten people with criminal sentences and get them then to guide them to things that the police want from them. Or they may just want to put the person away for whatever reason, because the person insulted them maybe or looked at them in the wrong way or wasn't completely obedient. A lot of people have gone to jail for sometimes long periods because there are long sentences and because they spoke up. That's going to be very greatly reduced. And it seems to me that the passage by almost 60% will also influence prosecutors and maybe even sent to treatment, maybe, or to a drug court or some other thing.
What the Criminal Justice Commission, which is a commission, did a study on what the impact would be on incarceration, especially those folks that are communities of color. What they found was that it would reduce racial disparities in drug arrests by 95% and reduce drug convictions of Black and Indigenous Oregonians by 94%. That's really monumental and really will help us as we're all calling to eliminate racist systems and to move us from these racist policies that we know are intentional and are harming folks. Arrests can break apart families, and people convicted of misdemeanor drug possessions can be jailed for 364 days and fined $6,000. And like we said before, it's a lifelong criminal record. The mass incarceration, we've got a long way to go, but this is a really great step that Oregon took. And I think that the message that it sends is, addiction is a public health crisis. It's not a criminal justice crisis. And it's Oregon's role to show that you can move from prosecuting and pushing people into jail over drugs and actually move to a much more effective and humane way, which is that folks need help. And you're not finding that help in the criminal justice and the legal system. We were lucky that quite a few of our district attorneys have decided that they're not going to charge folks, and that's even before the decriminalization goes into effect, which is on February 1. We'll see. I think what this has shown is that more people believe that this is a health crisis than a criminal issue, and we're finally dealing with it in that manner, and we're taking a much more humane way to interact with folks who use substances.
Bill Resnick here on KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon, talking to Tara Hurst, the Executive Director of the Oregon Health Justice Recovery Alliance. Tara worked in the great effort to pass Measure 110, did something enormously important, decriminalized drugs, and also provided funds for increased drug treatment. Tara was then hired on to lead the Oregon Health Justice Recovery Alliance that is working to ensure that Oregon's new law is implemented fully without delay, centering on the needs of the communities most harmed by war on drugs. So, Tara, Measure 110 was a great breakthrough. Actually, the margin of victory kind of shocked the nation. I am hoping that there will be copycat initiatives. Legislatures are afraid to act. But Oregon did what seemed impossible. This experiment now is going to be under the microscope. Its implementation, its outcomes on reducing drug crimes and deaths, its reduction, or maybe slight increase in drug use. People are going to be looking at that and fighting about that. So as the first in the nation, it's really important, it seems to me, to do it right. So, Tara, what are you folks now doing to make sure that things go right, that Measure 110 fulfills its promise?
So I think that we do recognize that we have a lot of scrutiny, and it's critical to get it right. That's exactly why we are in existence, because there's a lot of work to be done, and a lot of the details had already been figured out as the measure was progressing through the election by some of our states. Smartest people who have been working on these issues and recovery services for decades. You know, what our role is to really ensure that the measure is funded fully to be effective. I think that until a law becomes a law, there's always people who have a lot of conjectures of what could happen and that the sky is going to fall. And it's our job to ensure that not only does the sky not fall, but we're making communities safer. And we're helping people. And at the end of the day, it's critical that the legislature approves the funding that the voters overwhelmingly voted on to ensure that we have that warm handoff from police, from the criminal justice system to our peer mentors and to recovery services. And without that, you know, this can't be fully successful and fully actualized. And it's not what the voters voted on. The voters voted on a decriminalization with the money invested into a system that has been starved for so long that we're literally killing people in it. The work ahead for us, as you mentioned, we're actually now almost at 70 organizations that have signed on to this important work. And we're extremely proud to work alongside statewide organizations, and also a lot of culturally specific providers to ensure that the money comes in and the funds are dispersed to our culturally specific providers first. We are working with the legislature. We're really educating legislators more on everybody's got a lot of stuff coming at them, and it's our job to make sure that they understand what the voters' intent was and why the measure came about, and then asking them to support the funding that the voters voted on. I think it's really great that voters wanted to see marijuana tax dollars go to recovery services and harm reduction services. It's a huge step for all of us. And so that's the work that we have ahead. You know, the governor's office and her recommended budget did recommend that the funding get pushed out until July of 2022. I don't think that they necessarily are held to that, and we've been having really good conversations with their policy folks to make sure that we can speed that up. It's completely unacceptable to delay funding when so many Oregonians are dying and struggling with substance use at this time, especially during COVID. And we're also seeing a huge shortage in our behavioral health and our providers because of COVID and budgetary constraints, and we can't afford to lose these critical frontline workers.
One issue, it seems to me, is really important, which is the quality and effectiveness of the treatment programs. In some states, some treatment programs have been set up that are really scams, especially they scam people with health insurance and charge the health insurance companies a lot of money for very little treatment, as well as ping-ponging of people. They try to keep people addicted, actually, and this happened in Florida. It was a multi-billion-dollar scam on the health insurance companies and on Medicaid. We can't allow that to happen. How is the law going to be implemented so that really effective programs get the money? And then secondly, I wonder to what extent do the 12-step programs like Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous, for a lot of people, that self-organized activity where people with drug problems are helping one another, are forming relationships, are sharing the emotional and intellectual problems they face and the challenges of staying the person they want to be. It seems to me an enormously effective modality. Tara, what kind of oversight is going to be done?
So that's a great question. There is an Oversight and Accountability Council that was written into the measure that the Oregon Health Authority is currently going through the applications. I know as of a week or so ago, they had over 150 applications from across the state. And what this accountability council is charged to do is make the rules around who gets the funds, what services are funded, and ensure that really most impacted communities from the war on drugs are at the front of the line and get the majority of the funds. At least that's our intent. And hopefully what the Oversight and Accountability Council will see as well. The reason it's so exciting is that this is a council that is heavily populated with people with lived experience. And as you can imagine, it's really important that we have folks who have actually gone through the criminal justice system, has struggled with this, or is a provider and works with folks who are in this cycle, and have them at the center of the decision making is pretty revolutionary. So that's happening right now. They're also heavily weighting their choices on ensuring that we have overrepresentation of BIPOC communities, so Black, Indigenous, and people of color. That's how the oversight and accountability is going to be happening. There's also, you know, mandates for the Secretary of State to do audits on who it's serving. Is the money going to the most effective spaces and some other accountability measures? Because it's critical that these dollars are spent in the best, most effective way possible that will help the most people. You know, you've mentioned AA and NA, and those are both great organizations. Those are self-governing and rely only on donations, and that's not necessarily for organizations that we are working with. I can say that for my own personal story, AA and NA were transformational for me. And really at the core of that and why they were so transformational, I believe, is because it is all about peer-to-peer support, as we talked about before. And that's exactly what this measure is based on. And there's other ways for recovery and other programs that also utilize the power of peers. And that's really what the measure is doing as well. It's saying that instead of jail, we want folks getting connected to a peer. And sometimes it doesn't work the first, second, or third time when you're talking to a peer, but you create that connection and you plant that seed. And that's exactly what got me to the place when I was at my breaking point. I thought there was no other way to end the cycle than through taking my own life. And it was at that moment that I was able to utilize the information and the seeds that had been planted with me by a peer who was in recovery to get the help that I needed. And that's why I'm alive today. So I think the power of the peer, it's recognized as a evidence-based practice, and it's what is centered at the heart of this measure.
Sarah Hurst, Executive Director of Oregon Health Justice Recovery Alliance, that's pushing in the legislature and the state to ensure that Oregon's new law, Measure 110, is implemented fully without delay. Sarah, thanks so much for talking to us today. It was really great, and I know you're circulating a petition. How do people sign the petition?
We would love for folks to visit our website, which is healthjusticerecoveryalliance.org, and to sign up there, and they can stay involved and stay engaged. You know, you can visit us on social media as well, Health Justice Recovery, so that we can get you connected and you can help us in the fight to make sure that the funding goes through so that we can really transform our communities and get folks the help that they need.
Thanks so much.